Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
When you are involved in conversation with another person or a group of other people, have you ever prefaced an opinion of yours, a comment of yours, or a general statement of yours with something like, "Can I be very, very honest with you?" Or, "Well, if you will allow me to express myself in a very frank and candid manner for a moment, blah, blah, blah." Here is my question. Why are so many people afraid to express themselves to other people in a totally raw, brash, unadulterated, blunt, honest manner? Are you the type that would prefer to tell people pleasant lies rather than real, raw, and sometimes harsh truth? Do you prefer that people communicate to you in a manner that is dishonest and disingenuous if it means preventing your ego from being bruised or prevents your feelings from being hurt? My guest for the final episode of my sixth season here on Blog Talk Radio not only condones and encourages honest interpersonal communication with others, but taking it a step or two further, he believes in a very blunt and unapologetic form of honesty. To put it another way, he believes that men and women should express radical honesty to one another. He believes that this type of honesty will lead to longer-lasting friendships, longer-lasting romantic relationships and marriages, and more mutually beneficial and satisfying interactions with members of both genders. Who is this man who has decided to think outside the box and blatantly go against the idea of social conventions, despite the fact that many of his critics have referred to him sometimes as being rude, being eccentric, and totally lacking empathy towards the feelings of others? His name is Dr. Brad Blanton, and tonight, in my 2012-2013 season finale, Dr. Blanton will entertain and enlighten my listening audience on the powerful feeling you experience as a direct result of being unapologetically honest with others, as Dr. Blanton takes time out of his very busy schedule in order to get upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh, my God.
You're really good at this.
I got to ask you, though. Got to ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in their race? You do.
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This
is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Big. I know this will be growing when I be telling the biz. Now, you said your trust is getting weaker, probably because my lies just started getting deeper. And the reason for my confession is that I learned my lesson, and I really think you ought to know the truth. Because I lied and I cheated and I lied a little more, but after I did it, I don't know what I did it for. I admit that I've been a little immature, with your heart like I was the predator. In my book of lies, I was the editor and the author. I forged my signature, and I apologize for what I did to you. Cause what you did to me, I did to you.
No, 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 baby, no, 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 don't lie. No, 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 baby, no, 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 you gotta try.
What you gonna do?
I'm leaving, cause she can't take the pain. It's hard to continue this love, it ain't the same. Can't forget the things that I've done inside her brain. Too many lies committed, too many games.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, July 18th, and the significance of tonight's episode is that it will be my very last episode of my sixth season on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, it's been a great season. I've had great guests. My seasons, if you're not familiar with my show, I usually run my seasons from mid to late September. That's usually when I get started, in mid to late September. And then I go all the way up until about mid-July. And then I take about an 8 to 10 week hiatus, kind of take a break and get rejuvenated and, you know, kind of relax a little bit. Then I come back strong again in mid to late September in the fall with a new season. So, yeah, this will be my last episode of my sixth season on Blog Talk Radio. And I've enjoyed every single interview and discussion that I've had over the 2012-2013 season. And what better way to close it out? I think, if I say so myself, I think I've closed this season out with a bang. I loved all my guests this season, really all of my guests, but particularly my last three guests. I had Daniel Bergner on a couple episodes ago. Did you know that that interview with Daniel Bergner ended up being my most listened to episode ever? Since I started my show in late June of 2007 up until now, yeah, that ended up being, as of right now, that is my most listened to episode ever, as far as a combination of live listeners and archive podcast listeners. My interview with Daniel Bergner, the author of What Do Women Really Want, ended up being my most listened to episode in the last 6 years. Previously, it was actually, interesting enough, my season finale last year. My season finale last summer in mid-July, I had an open forum discussion. I didn't have a guest. I just had an open forum discussion about the direct approach versus the indirect approach. And that previously was my most listened to episode ever. But the Daniel Bergner episode surpassed it. Then last week I had Dr. Christopher Ryan. I really enjoyed conversing with Dr. Christopher Ryan. Very intelligent guy, very charismatic guy, very knowledgeable guy. I had a great time conversing with him about his book, Sex at Dawn.
I really enjoyed that interview and discussion. And then tonight, I have a guy who I could say to a degree is, you could say, is almost one of my idols. His book is very similar to mine, although he would probably argue that my book is similar to his, since technically his book came out first. His book was published, I think, in 1996 or 1997. I didn't first hear of him until about 2002. Yeah, I want to say it was around 2002 when I first heard of my guest tonight, because I was selling my ebook on the internet, and if I say so myself, it was selling like hotcakes. My book, if you're not familiar with it, it's called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. And yeah, I was selling it as an ebook starting with November, December of 2001. I started selling it on the internet as an ebook. And anyway, a lot of my male readers kept comparing me to my guest tonight. When they would read my book, they'd say, "Hey man, your book is really good. It's actually just like this other author who wrote this book called Radical Honesty." And yeah, I would say at least, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10% of the guys who were reading my ebook would always bring up this book called Radical Honesty. So finally, I read the book in 2002, and I was like, wow, this book is similar to mine. Even though the main difference, his book doesn't specifically concentrate on male-female interactions. It concentrates on interpersonal communication skills with everybody, members of your own gender as well as members of the opposite gender. Whereas my book is more tailor-made to dating and relationships and male-female interactions. But they're very similar in the sense that they both promote bold, upfront, unapologetic honesty with people. And so I became a fan. Matter of fact, if you were to read my book, the paperback version, well, now the ebook version too, I actually quote him in my book. He's quoted in my book at least 2, if not 3 times. So he's going to be my guest. The author of Radical Honesty is going to be my guest on my 2012-2013 season finale. And you're going to enjoy the conversation. I guarantee you that. So again, I won't have a show next week, at least not a live show. I won't have a live show again until mid to late September. I don't know the exact date at this time. It's going to be either the 19th or 26th of September. It's going to be one of those two dates. That's going to be my next show. My next live show after tonight will be either Thursday, September 19th, or Thursday, September 26th. And so I will keep you posted on Facebook, on my Blog Talk Radio page, and on Twitter about when exactly and definitely my next episode will be, who my guest will be. I'm actually trying to have the actor on my show for my season opener for next season, because he has a movie coming up. The guy who played Robin in The Dark Knight Rises. Why am I forgetting his name? Oh, my God. Somebody in the chat room, help me out. He got 3 names like me. Alan Roger Curry, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That's who I'm trying to get as my guest for my season opener of my 2013-2014 season. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I've talked to his publicists. Right now it's at kind of 50-50. There's like a 50% chance he will be my special guest for my season opener, and there's a 50% chance he won't be. But he has a movie coming out about pickup artists that I got to see. So, yeah, I definitely want him to be – he's my number one choice to be my special guest for my next season opener. As you know, the big news this week, hands down, has been the Trayvon Martin verdict. I can't say I was surprised by it. I was disappointed by it. And for right now, that's all I'm going to say on it. There is a controversial
Rolling Stone. Do you ever read Rolling Stone magazine? Well, they're coming under fire and coming under a lot of criticism because they featured the Boston Bomber on the cover of their magazine. That's right. Rolling Stone magazine pictured a photo of the guy, I can't pronounce his name, I'm not going to even try to. And so a lot of people are upset with Rolling Stone magazine over that cover. So we shall see how that plays out. Did anybody watch the ESPYs? I thought John Hamm did a great job of being the master of ceremonies of ESPN's sports awards, nicknamed the ESPYs. He had some real funny jokes, particularly about Dwight Howard, who was leaving L.A. to go to Houston. I thought that if you missed it, check it out on YouTube, on the internet. He had some very funny jokes. And that's about it in the news. This is probably a slow time for me as far as sports. You know, usually I mention sports, but for me, I hate that period between the end of the NBA season and the beginning of the NFL season. I get kind of like dejected because I'm not the biggest baseball fan. I only watch baseball, enjoy watching baseball when I'm right there at the game in person. But I don't like watching baseball on TV. It's just too slow paced for me. I want to remind everyone that I will be speaking in New York City next weekend, July 27th, July 28th. I will be speaking in New York City for the next Direct Approach Dating Summit. If you're a single heterosexual male, you're interested in attending, go to directdatingsummit.com. I will be a featured speaker at the Direct Dating Summit. I've already participated in three of them. This will be my fourth one. I participated in one in London, one in Vegas, and one in Berlin, Germany. And this will mark my fourth one being a featured speaker. And I look forward to it. Again, that will be next weekend, July 27th, July 28th. I will be speaking in New York City, the Big Apple. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick intermission break. But when I get back, we're going to start the conversation with my guest for the evening. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back after this intermission break.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
To know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, "You got a talent for this rollerblading thing." And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, "Yes, I love to rollerblade." I said, "Well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading." I said, "Your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex?" And she was like, "Oh my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses?" I was like, "Is that a trick question?"
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at blogtalkradioadvertising@mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now. Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back, listeners, to the 2012-2013 season finale of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. If you're a new listener, I usually go on hiatus for about 8 to 10 weeks, starting with mid-July. So my last show of my season, I go from roughly mid to late September to about early to mid-July. And so this will bring a close to my sixth season on Blog Talk Radio. And how better than to close my season out than to interview a gentleman that I've been a fan of for at least 11 to 12 years when I read his book. And I'm just really excited to have him join me for my season finale. My guest for the evening, who currently resides in a small town in Virginia, is a psychotherapist, author, and seminar leader who has quite frequently described himself as white trash with a PhD. My guest earned his doctorate from the University of Texas in 1966 when he was just 25 years old. 25 years old, he got his PhD, and has spent 25 years in the private practice of clinical psychology and became the director of the Center for Well-Being in Washington, D.C., where he did psychotherapy with individuals, couples, and groups. He also served as a consultant to corporations, government, and the media. In 1990, he moved to Central Virginia and founded Radical Honesty Enterprises, a private corporation, and the Center for Radical Honesty, a nonprofit corporation that promotes honesty in the world. He created the Course in Honesty 8-Day Workshop, and for the last 15 years has conducted that and other workshops at the rate of 6 to 10 times a year in the U.S., Canada, and internationally. He has conducted workshops at the Roe Camp and Conference Center, Omega at Rhinebeck, New York, and Omega at the Crossings in Austin, Texas, and other growth centers. He has conducted corporate trainings in the United States, Canada, Germany, Sweden, and Denmark. Armed with a quick wit and an engaging southern accent, my guest for the evening speaks with an unwavering honesty that is both disarming and challenging to some, a quality that has earned him both admirers as well as harsh critics and, as I call them, haters. We all got haters. They say you're not successful until you have haters. His first book, entitled Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth, became a nationwide bestseller in 1996 and has since been translated into seven languages.
His second book, Practicing Radical Honesty, How to Complete the Past, Live in the Present, and Build a Future with a Little Help from Your Friends, which is about the relationship between personal transformation and social transformation, was the first cause of his 2006 race for Congress. In 2002, consistent with this same theme, he published Honest to God, A Change of Heart That Can Change the World with Neil Donald Walsh. Also in 2002, he published Radical Parenting, 7 Steps to a Functional Family in a Dysfunctional World, which is about child rearing, which my guest says is the most radical book he has ever written. In 2004, he edited and published The Truth Teller, Stories of Success by Radically Honest People, which is made up of inspiring stories of what happened to people from all walks of life who read his books or graduated from his 8-day residential workshop called The Course in Honesty when they tried being honest in the real world. My guest has been interviewed numerous times on hundreds of television and radio shows in the U.S. and abroad, including 2020 with John Stossel, Dateline NBC, CNN, Talkback Live, Montel Williams, Sally Jesse Raphael, Ayanla, Roseanne, and many others. He's been written about many times in magazines such as Men's Health, Inner Self, Cosmopolitan, Family Circle, the Chicago Herald Tribune, the Washington Post, and too many other media publications to mention. So on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and the listeners of Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for the legendary Dr. Brad Blanton. It is my pleasure and honor to talk to you, sir.
Thank you. That's the best introduction I've had in a long time.
Well, hey, if there's anybody who deserves it, see, you probably don't know my history, my background, and the books I've written, but to quickly give you the minute or two update of who I am, I have a book out called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. That's my most well-known book, and since I've written 2 or 3 other books. And you can, if I had to give a summation of what my book is about, a lot of my supporters actually have nicknamed Mode 1 Radical Honesty for Attraction and Seduction, because I specifically deal with dating relationships and approaching women, particularly with the intention of dating them or having sex with them. So it was because I wrote my book, when I wrote my ebook, I started getting a lot of feedback. Guys would say, "Hey, Alan, man, I like your ebook. Have you ever heard of Radical Honesty?" And at first, honestly, I was like, "No, I haven't." And because I kept having so many readers of my ebook say that, I said, well, let me check this book out. This was probably about 2001, no later than 2002. And I read your book, and I was like, wow, wow, wow. So immediately you became like my idol. I was like, this book is so thorough. I mean, it's like you articulated a lot of my thoughts way more intelligently and eloquently than I could ever do. And anyway, I've been a fan since. So I've always wanted to have you as a guest on this show to talk about you. So I first want to ask you, let's go back to, I guess, well, first I want to just ask you right off the bat, you earned a doctorate when you were 25 years old. How did you do that?
Well, I was a borderline PhD. They kind of wanted to get me out of there because I was in the civil rights movement and I was getting a lot of headlines and defaming the name of the psychology and educational psychology department as I was leading protests against the war in Vietnam and getting arrested in the civil rights movement. And I was actually talking about putting your mouth to actually act on whatever you talk about rather than just talk about it. Mm-hmm. So when we started talking about compassion and learning how to be a psychotherapist and all that kind of stuff, I said, yes, it seems to me, though, that it's not just one-on-one. It has to do with the way you are in the society as well. So I had a couple of professors. One of them had just come there from Harvard. He was a real good backer of me, and the chairman of the department was kind of like trying to get me all that. And I threatened him physically one time. I said I'm usually a nonviolent guy, but I might just kick your ass. But anyway, so, and I was smart enough, and I wrote a pretty good dissertation, and then everybody liked it and approved of it, and they just wanted me to get the hell out of there, so they graduated. It helps. It helps to be such a pain in the ass that nobody wants you around anymore. It helps in academia.
Well, that so, is quite an achievement because, wow, I mean, I don't know if I've ever met anyone in my life who had the doctorate by the time they were 25. So to take me back in
this,
the
I
mind.
I was a poor boy. They had this program there where if you could skip your master's degree if you were able to pass the PhD qualifying exams prior to writing your master's degree. And I was able to do that. So it was kind of a thing given to a limited number of people who were able to qualify for the PhD program after only a couple of years in graduate school. So they let me into the PhD program without having to write a master's thesis, and I turned what was my master's thesis into my doctoral dissertation. So it helped. It helped that there was a special program there. They recognized people that were quick to learn stuff anyway.
Okay.
Well, that's so that's how I did it.
Now, even though you explain a lot of this in the book, and a lot of these questions I will have for you, you do explain it in the book, so, but we're going to assume that a number of my listeners are not familiar with you or your book, but I think definitely most of my male listeners are definitely familiar with you. What series of events happened in your life that ultimately led you to write Radical Honesty?
Well, I worked in Washington, D.C. After I got my doctorate, I did a postdoc in clinical work at the Group Therapy Centers of Washington, D.C. So I was working in Washington, D.C. for a two-year postdoc, and I ended up having a big private practice in Washington, D.C. I saw a lot of people work for the government and a lot of people work for industry-related government. I saw more lawyers than any other single profession. And so, of course, I became an expert on lying because that would be natural in that context. Basically, I started coaching people who were very good liars and who'd made it in life by promoting themselves as lying. I started getting them to experiment with telling the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and to tell everything they did, everything they thought, everything they felt, and to have honest relationships with their people they work with, their spouses, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, and everyone, to live in the world out loud and let the chips fall where they may and see what happens. And it turned out pretty good because it turned out to be the best cure for depression I'd ever come up with or he'd seen anybody else come up with. Because you had some rough going, a lot of arguing and hollering and some crying and stuff going on in the first month or two. But as these things go, quick cure of depression because depression is primarily anger that's lied about. And so whenever you stop lying about it and you interact, you actually work through things in the real world, rather than working through things in some imaginary land of your mind. And basically, I learned from those people that the real cause of depression, anxiety, and conflict with couples is being trapped in the jail of your own mind. And actually, you know, the American Negro College Fund has this slogan, "A mind is a terrible thing to waste." And I I took that over, and my slogan is, "A mind is a terrible thing. Waste it."
Yeah. I remember reading that.
And the thing is, your mind is not your best friend a lot of time because it comes with all these ideas about how you should pitch yourself and how you should put on poses and pretenses in front of other people and that your real identity is your performance and who you are is the grades you make and what people think of you and stuff like that. And that's just a lie. Who you are is a being who's sitting there talking into a microphone or a phone, and I'm talking on a phone to you. Right? And that's who I am right now. And who you are right now is that person who's right now, this second, is listening. And that is my primary identity and your primary identity. And the history and my achievements and your achievements and all those things, Those are things we did, but they're not who we are. And so if you don't have to defend those things or promote them or anything like that. You just be here now and notice what's going on, tell the truth, and screw them if they can't take a joke. It's like, I don't honor minds very much. Usually mine's just a terrible BS machine. It generates BS 1 minute after the next. I don't even respect my own mind. I'm sure as hell not going to respect anybody else's. So if I honor a person's being, I'm going to disrespect their mind a lot. I say, no, that's BS, sorry. And I do it myself. I say something, I say, oh, no, I think it's just BS I was putting out there. Forget it, I was lying. And when people come off it with me like that, I love them. I just think it's great. Every time somebody tries some kind of pitch, says, oh, no, it's just BS, I'm sorry. I just think, well, I love you, brother. That's good. That's what I came here to hear. And believe me, I'm good friends with Evan Pagan, and he's made millions and millions on the internet, you know, with dating advice and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
He got a lot of that from reading Radical Honesty, he admits. And it has to do with just telling the truth. If you, like, on the first date, you say, you look really good. I'd like to go to bed with you right now and talk about it later. She says, no.
Well, see, that's funny you say that. I have to pause you right here. See, that's actually the essence. I mean, I cover a few other things, but if I had to sum up my book I mentioned in a nutshell, Mo 1, that's what it's about, is that scenario you just described is
really?
What happened
right.
with me
well, good for you.
Was I my first influence, and don't laugh at me, but of all things, was a porno movie. I saw this porno movie called, all my listeners and followers know this, it was called Talk Dirty to Me. And you could say in its own way, that was my first exposure to what I would call radical honesty, is that there was this character in this film by the name of Jack. He was like this slacker womanizer. And at the time I saw the film, I was so used to guys approaching women and, you know, talking about the weather and basically engaging what I call trivial small talk. But he would just go up to women in the film and just tell them, I want to fuck you. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know. So a couple years later, I decided to try that in real life, you know. I said, I'm going to just see what happens if I go up to women and just straightforwardly tell them that I want to fuck them in the first conversation. And to my pleasant surprise, I got a lot of favorable results. And that's kind of how Mo 1 was born. And but again, then I found out about your book, and I read your book, and I was just like, wow. Matter of fact, there is a group in Mexico? I can't remember now. It's either Mexico or Brazil. I'm sorry, I'm confused which country it is. But there's a group on Facebook actually called the Mode 1 Radical Honesty Group. So they're fans of both of us. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but when you mentioned
that's telling
a woman straight up that you want to have sex with her, I mean, it's something that people either really admire or people harshly, like I'm sure you've gotten this feedback. Women will say to me, oh, I think that's so socially inappropriate to tell a woman in your first conversation with her that you want to have sex with her. I think that's so rude and inappropriate. So let me ask the master himself, Dr. Bland, if a woman was to come to you and say all that stuff, what would be your response to her trying to make you believe that it's rude or socially inappropriate to be radically honest about your sexual desires?
Oh, I'd just say, if she used that tone you use, I'd say, I can't stand your voice. That'd be the first thing I'd say. And then... Then after that, I'd say whatever you say is BS too. So I don't care. You know, you don't have to. I'm not forcing the world to do what I do. I just do what I do. If you don't like it, then just goodbye. Save me a lot of time.
There you go, man. No, I was just cue.
By a woman. I got treated by a woman one time because of talking out openly in a group therapy group. And she was saying that her boyfriend was going to leave her and she'd never find anybody else. And she was very attractive. I said, oh, no, that's crazy. All men in the world want to fuck you. And about half the women. And maybe a few gay guys probably would like to jump you, too. Anyway, so we were at the, she sued me for malpractice or something as a therapist, and so we were having this preliminary thing for the court, and the lawyer says to me, Dr. Blanton, did you say to Miss So-and-so that you would like to have sexual intercourse with her? And I said, hell no, I don't talk like that. I said, I'd love to fuck her. And the fucking court reporter, the woman that was the court reporter, fell down in the goddamn floor laughing. She fell down on the floor laughing. She couldn't hardly recover after that. And as to break, she got up to me. She said, that I've been a court reporter for 17 years, and this is the most fun I've ever had doing it. So, because of the way I was, I demanded a jury trial. They thought, hell, we could never win a jury trial. Everybody, I think that guy's pretty fucking funny, and he's telling the truth that we couldn't probably win a jury, and they just dropped it. So it's like, basically, you know, when you're in court, you're supposed to lie all the time because there's a whole system based on lying. But every now and then, if you tell the truth, you can get by with it.
Oh, man, that's funny. So let me just ask you, since this is the subject of just truth and honesty is again, the cause of a lot of debates and attracts criticism. First of all, what is, it might sound like a silly question, crazy question, but what is Dr. Blanton's definition of truth?
Well, I don't really have a global definition of truth, but I have a definition of honesty because honesty is a little funkier. It's someone saying what is so. It's like, it's describing, what you, it's basically, I'd rather define honesty. And honesty
okay.
is simply reporting what is there, reporting what is there. And the whole world, the whole awareness continuum, everything you can possibly be aware of can be divided into three parts. You can notice what's going on in your body right now in terms of sensations and experiences. That's one part. Second part, you can notice what's going outside of you right now. You can hear my voice and see whatever you're looking at there. And the third is you can notice what's going through your mind right now. And that's all there is. There ain't no more. It's, I call it inside, outside, upside down. So you can only notice what's in front of you right now, what's going on in your body right now, and what's going through your mind right now, and that's it. There ain't no more. And radical honesty is simply reporting on what you notice. You report what you notice going through your mind. You don't filter it and modify it and change it and manipulate it and do protection rackets with it or anything like that. You just say it. And you describe what's going on in your body, and you describe what's going on in the outside world. So you say, I noticed that you're smiling at me and I like the way you look and you got really pretty boobs. And she says, well, you're not supposed to talk like that. And I said, I like the way you smile when you say I'm not supposed to talk like that. And she'll say, okay, where? Your place or mine? I'm talking about that because basically people rightfully honor people who are open and vulnerable and honest. And it's a certain vulnerability there. Whenever you say what's really going through your mind, people think, oh, you know better than to do that, you poor idiot. So I have to take you under my arm and protect you because you're too stupid. You go out there in the world, you probably get shot in 15 minutes, but I haven't ever been shot. I've been shot at, but nobody ever hit me. And the thing is that the truth is that the life that is more open and actually vulnerable because you're not playing all these games and manipulating and being alienated from people because of trying to con everybody in the world, you end up getting a whole lot more real loving and real innocent, real direct intimacy with friends, with members of both sexes, with people who you care about and care about you because you share something at a deeper level whenever you're not just doing the usual social BS of being funny the way you're supposed to be funny to look like you know what you're doing.
Good stuff.
That was a little longer answer than you asked for.
Oh, no. That was a great answer. That's what I was looking for. Now, you may make the very strong statement, well, you make literally hundreds of strong statements in your book, but one of your early statements is simply that over the past few decades, we've become a nation full of liars and phony people and bullshitters. In your best estimation, why do you think so many of us in society have come to a point where many of us look at being, to one degree or another, dishonest or disingenuous and full of shit as socially appropriate, almost hinting that it's a good thing, and then on the flip side, we look at raw, unadulterated honesty as something that's inappropriate? What do you think? How did we transition to this point?
It's a problem of mistaken identity. People got to keep thinking that belief is the most important thing in the world, that they think that who they are is their performance. If you think that who you are is the grades you make and then what other people think of you, you start pretending things with them that make them think better of you. And that's the way we're all taught to do. My last two kids I've had are homeschooled. One of them is 20 now, one's 28. They're both great successes in the world. And I kept them out of school because I didn't want them learning all the BS that's there. I didn't want them wasting their lives for so many years doing stuff that wasn't relevant to really learning what they wanted to know. So basically, I homeschooled them. And I advocate homeschooling in my parenting book, too, because basically, most of what goes on in school, just like most of what goes on in church or synagogue or mosque, is all BS in the first place. I don't believe in belief, and I don't believe that your identity has something to do with the sales pitch you can do to other people about who you are, how important you are, and how all that other stuff. We all do that all the time, but we just need to take it with a grain of salt. It's just the general BS generated by our minds. But it doesn't have much to do with actually making it in the world in a successful way in terms of where you feel nourished and loved by the people that are your friends and you're a real participant in your family. And whether you stay married or get divorced, you work it out in such a way that both of you still forgive each other and love each other and still co-parent together and don't leave it up to the damn court system, which is just a pack of lies in the first place. So the thing is, what we have to get over is believing in belief, you know. It's not, there's not any authority that knows more about my life than I do, and I wouldn't bet on me. so it's like, I'm not highly overrating anybody's mind. I think anybody's mind probably just generally is just a bullshit machine. Don't overrate it. It's like a good coffee pot's probably a better machine than your mind is.
Now, since you brought up religion, I have to ask you, what do you think that organized religion to one degree or another contributes to people being more dishonest and full of shit?
Yeah, I think the source of lying is religious moralism, righteousness. Although I have my own church, you know, I'm the Pope of the World Futilitarian Church. I'm a futilitarian, which we only have two principles. One is forget it. that's the first principle. And the second principle is I'm the Pope. I'm known as the Pope of no hope. I'm the actual. and everybody who joins the church is the Pope too. We got like seven or eight popes in this church. Anyway, we're all fucking popes. There's no member other than Pope. Everybody's the Pope.
So
anyway,
oh, man.
The other futilitarian belief is that pygmies are stealing our luggage. That's because of a hallucination I had when I was high. I saw the whole world with pygmies crawling all over stealing each other's luggage. I saw a view of capitalism. so every time, like I lost my golf clubs, they got lost in flight about 3 or 4 years ago. I said, those damn pygmies, I knew it. There they are again. That's my view, is that pygmies are stealing our luggage. And that's the only two beliefs of the futilitarian church. So I started this church. It's kind of an anti-church church. in order to keep me from joining any damn church, which is what I recommend to people, so basically.
Now,
if you want to have some religious faith, change it every 2 or 3 years at least.
I'm sure you, well, I've always known since I've kept up with you that you have your share of, as I call them, haters. But I would have to bet that you get probably a lot of harsh, because so many people in society are definitely, you know, pro-religion. So I'm sure, have you gotten like hate mail or anything like that because of your attitude towards religion?
Oh, yeah, now and then I get some. I get a few Republicans out here don't like me. I got the best hate call I ever got. I got a call when I was in civil rights movement way back. I was a lot younger. This guy in Texas, we got in the news because we had integrated the theaters. And this guy calls me up on the phone. He says, "You goddamn near-loving son of a bitch, we're going to string you up and cut your balls off." And
wow.
There was a little pause, and I thought about it. And I said, "Well, as long as you do it in that order, it won't be that bad."
Oh, man.
Although after he strings you up, that's not so bad.
You do have a quick wit about you. Wow, that's something. Okay, now you also mentioned, you're talking about your two kids that you homeschooled, and I read that you said that your book about parenting, why did I forget to, here it is, Radical Parenting, 7 Steps to a Functional Family in a Dysfunctional World. So let me ask you about this, same way with religion. Do you think a lot of men and women's immediate family, and particularly their parents, contribute to a lot of their dishonest tendencies and disingenuous tendencies?
Yeah, actually, I'm working on an online course right now called The Course in Completion. And it's about completing what's incomplete in families. It's about telling your parents all the stuff you got by with, that you got away with, that you lied to them about. Go back and tell them now. Let them know that you've grown up, you're not going to lie to them anymore. And let them get mad and tell them what you resent that they did and what you appreciate that they did, and be very specific so that you complete what is incomplete, because that relationship with your parents and with your ex-wives or ex-girlfriends or people from your past that you left unfinished business, that unfinished business still invades your future, because we live out of reaction to our past. We're not really rationally in control of our mind. It's like like Pascal said, the heart has reasons that reason knows nothing of. You go back there and complete what is incomplete in order to renew your relationship with each other as new adult people. You have to announce that you've grown up, and then you have to get it. It takes you a while to get the news that you are actually grown up and responsible for your own life. And the way you get the news is by telling the truth about what you got by with. So you got by with it. You lied, it worked out okay, it was successful, now you go and ruin everything by telling the truth, because that's what you need to do to grow up. So this is an online course called The Course in Completion. And I'm trying to do it all. I've done it lots and lots of years with people in the 8-day workshop and with other shorter weekend workshops and stuff like that. Now I'm trying to put it online. But the idea is to get that there, your whole family of your past lives inside your own mind, lives also out there in the real world. And the family of your future is tremendously affected by how you finish up your unfinished business with your family of the past and current time. So that's what I'm working on these days.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very interesting. Listeners, I'm going to take a brief intermission right now, but don't go anywhere, because when I come back, I will have more questions and more conversation with the legendary Dr. Brad Blanton. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
No one.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
Everybody.
Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex disease.
This is Nikki True, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Nikki Ransom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net.
All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Oh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Tuning in, it's nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips, it's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff because it's awesome. And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls.
If you're in London, this is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from. Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister's name.
Okay. Well, I will see you. Mm.
You will?
Ryan.
Ryan. Me too.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting the sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the street. You know, chat girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man.
Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. I just want a little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the boot camp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... Just... what? Come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my 2012-2013 season finale of Upfront and Straightforward with special guest Dr. Brad Blanton, author of Radical Honesty, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Listeners, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. If you just tuned in, tonight is my season finale of my sixth season on Blog Talk Radio. Upfront and Straightforward is the number one most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and dating and relationships, self-help for singles. And no better way than to close out my 2012-2013 season than to have a guest whose work I admire so much and who's influenced me a lot. Matter of fact, if I was ranking the top two authors of all of the self-help books I've read that I say that most resonated with me, it's Dr. Stephen Covey, who passed away. He was the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And the other author is my guest tonight. His name is Dr. Brad Blanton. And I first became familiar with him in about 2001 because someone told me about the book Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth. Is the book, if you haven't read it, it's a must. You notice I said it three times. It's a must-read book. You gotta read it. I mean, there's not too many books I say are a must-read book. This is a must. Seriously, it's the book, as we say in the hood, it's off the chain. I mean, it just... You're going to read the book. If you're like me, you're going to read this book and say, have so many moments where you say, oh, man, no wonder I felt this way when this happened. And no wonder I experienced this when I, you know, told this lie. It's just a great book. And anyway, I'm happy to have him. He's my special guest tonight, Dr. Brad Blanton. Back with you. Yes, you, your book, you talk about, you've already talked about how we allow ourselves to be dominated by our minds and I would say our egos. You have a chapter in your book called Levels of Telling the Truth. Can you briefly explain and elaborate to my listeners what that chapter is about?
Well, it's mostly about just starting. Just start somewhere. And just tell the truth about what you've seen or what you've heard. Or tell the truth about what you think or what you feel to somebody. What I recommend is that you make a deal with a friend that for 3 weeks you'll tell each other the complete truth. And you just try it out. Say, I'm going to try this, see if it works. And you all make an agreement that after 3 weeks you'll get together again, decide whether you're going to keep doing that or go back to just doing the way you were before, being like funny and a little bit extra polite and not telling the truth about things that might hurt each other's feelings and stuff like that. So I ask people to just start off and do that. And the, what happens at the first level is you start finding there's a lot of stuff that you thought you already knew that the other person thought or felt, but they just hadn't told you before. And when they do, a couple of things happen. One is you feel kind of warm towards them and grateful that they did tell you the truth. And the other is a lot of funny things happen. You can find out, oh, yeah, me too. I got the same kind of dumb belief, and I didn't tell you such and such because I was worried about. And you end up getting closer by just getting a little more honest just at that first level, just which is, oh, the little white lies I've been telling you in order to protect your feelings are such and such. And then you confess the little white lies. And then you go ahead and you go all the way to the level of telling the truth about if you had an affair and you're married and you've been lying about it. Then that's the one, that's the jackpot when you hit that one. You all have to work through that one. You got to get through that. You have to forgive each other for whatever you did about that lie and however long it takes, because whether you stay together or whether you split up, you have to get over that, or else that reaction to that will determine the rest of your future intimate relationships. So it's like what happens is that at the sort of the highest level of telling the truth is you tell the truth about your expectations and your desires. And the probably the highest level of a relationship is one in which two people get across from each other and one of them says to the other, if you really want to make me happy, then do this. And this will really make me happy. And that's what I want you to do to make me happy. And if you don't worry about it. I'm a big boy. I'll take care of myself. And you don't have to make me happy. My happiness is not up to you. I will get mad at you for not doing it, and I'll get over being mad at you, and then we'll come up with something else. So there's nothing that I want you to do that you have to do. I'd just like for you to do it if you don't mind. Well, when someone says that to you that way, you say, sure, hell, that's not a big deal. I'll do that. But they say, you have to do it to make me happy. You say, screw you, I'm not doing it. You know, when people take responsibility for their being in the world and for their own happiness, and they say, it's up to me, it's not up to you, I'd like for you to do this for me, but if you don't, it's all right, and no matter what, if I get heartbroken, I'll get over being heartbroken. If I get angry, I'll get over being angry. I'll handle it, and I'll work it out with you. So you don't really, you're not obligated to live up to my expectations in this world in order for me to be happy or to get along with me. And actually, that's the power, that's the most powerful kind of relationship you can have. Now, only maybe like 10 or 15% of couples have that kind of relationship, and most of the other people in relationship just have relationships that suck. And that's the truth. That is the way things are, period.
Yeah,
not very many people are very good at having relationships. So, like, basically, if you want to get good, you better get good at taking care of yourself by telling the truth. So that's what it is. It's basically about that.
Now, you brought up something interesting when you talked about, use the example of having an affair. I had a guest on this show, it's been about probably 2 or 3 years now. Are you familiar with the name Esther Perel?
I've heard it before, but I don't know what context.
She wrote a book about erotic intelligence, and we had a great interview, but if there was one thing she said that I couldn't wholeheartedly agree with, and it caused a lot of conversation and debate among my listeners. She made the comment that she said, if you're married and you were having an ongoing affair with someone, then that's when you should be completely honest with them and confess that to them, and you and your spouse work through that. But on the flip side, she said, if you had, say, just a one-night stand or a weekend fling with somebody while you were, like, say, out of town on a business trip, she said, I would suggest you keep that to yourself. Why destroy a marriage or a long-term relationship because of a one-time, you know, sexual tryst. Now, because I'm all about upfront, straightforward honesty, and I know you, I had to disagree, respectfully disagree with that. I said, well, so you're saying it's okay to lie to your wife or husband? She said, yes, it's a one-night stand, weekend fling, yes. So I'm going to definitely get your thoughts on that. What do you think about her saying that?
I think she's wrong. I mean, believe me, I've tried it both ways. And I know a lot of people that have. And you got to go ahead and clean it up. That's what completion is. That's what I'm saying. I'm coaching everybody to do it, like, basically, unless you're in court. I mean, I'm not advocating to tell the truth all the time. If you have Anne Frank in the attic and Nazi knocks on the door and says there ain't Jews in the South, lie. And lie, if you're in the criminal justice system of America, it's based on lies, so lie like hell. Get a lawyer, they're good at lying. And, but in terms of your personal relationships, your intimate relationships, your marriage and divorce and your family and everything like that, it's really critically important that you be open and honest and tell the truth about what you've done, what you think, what you feel, what you do. And anything less than that is some kind of manipulative, phony, control freak relationship. It's not, the worst thing in the world. Most relationships are that. But if you want to have a powerful relationship, you're going to have to clean up your act with regard to what you're withholding and lying about. And there ain't no way to do it, because it's such a, it's a way of giving away your power and not using your ability to be present as your way of orienting yourself in life. The best way to get around this world is to pay attention to where you're going. And so what I teach is about not getting smarter, it's about getting dumber. You know, your mind's not that big a thing. It's not that good anyway, you know. So you just keep your eyes open and keep telling the truth, and don't worry about what your mind comes up. It's just going to be more BS anyway.
Now you mentioned lawyers quite a bit, and I don't know how much of a movie buff you are, but there was a movie that came out years ago with the comedian Jim Carrey called Liar, where he was put in a situation where he could not physically tell a lie. And when I think of that movie, honestly, it makes me think of you and your book. And so I just want to ask you, you know, some people tend to brush off hypothetical questions, but I just got to ask you, let's say everybody for at least, well, in a way, this relates to your workshop, because you say you have a workshop where you make people just tell the truth. But I was going to say, what if for at least, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months, everybody in the world had the dilemma that Jim Carrey had in that movie? Do you think when it's all said and done, the world would be a better place, about the same, or worse?
Be a much better place. Be a lot of hard times in between, but basically it'd be a much better place. What we do is, you know, it's moralism is the disease that's killing humanity. Moralism is believing in belief. You just think that being right and not being wrong is the most important thing in the world. It's not. The most important thing in the world is being awake. It's not being right. And when people think that being right is the most important thing in the world, it makes a damn difference if they're a Baptist or a Muslim or I don't give a damn what religion they are or anything else. It's the moralism, the moral righteousness, the belief in you must do what is right and you should do what you should do and you shouldn't do what you shouldn't do and your whole life is about shoulds and shouldn'ts. That life is not worth living. And I have a stand on that because I've seen so many people who, like, ruin their lives by being morally self-righteous and dumbasses trying to do what their mind told them to do when their mind was as bullshit as a Christmas turkey. And they had, like, basically lawyers study all the things about what's right and what's wrong all the time. And the poor, miserable bastards, they're given the worst education in the world. And, you know, they actually, you know, the Institute, the National Institutes of Health about 2 years ago decided to stop using rats for research, and they decided they're going to use lawyers instead. they had three reasons. The first reason was there's more of them. There's more lawyers than there are rats. The second reason was that the lab assistants didn't get so attached to them. And the third reason was there are some things you just can't get a rat to do.
Oh, Dr. Bland, you are classic. You are classic, my friend. Wow. Now, you started up, I think this, you briefly touched on this at the beginning of the conversation. You definitely talk about your book. I remember watching somebody interview Oprah, and they said, Oprah, what fascinates me is that a lot of people will come on your show and admit that they, you know, either committed a murder years ago or they sexually abused their daughter years ago, just stuff that they didn't have to tell. They said, mm-hmm. They asked her, they said, why would somebody tell something like that, especially after so many years of keeping it inside? And she says, because it was like them carrying around this weight, this big lead ball. And when they let that out, it's like they're releasing that weight. And you say in your book that when you keep secrets and hide things from other people and lie to people, that it actually at minimum causes stress and at maximum causes depression. Can you elaborate on that more?
Well, it's that you keep lonely. You keep isolated within the jail of your own mind whenever you're having to protect against people finding something out. And so you're walking around in the world among people, but you're not really with those people. You don't really connect to those people because there is this shield of your own mind in between you and them. And what people really want is some kind of reconnection with people. And it's not that the people are keeping disconnected from them, although they cooperate pretty well, is that they're keeping disconnected from people by not actually being real with them. You can't get much intimacy out of phoniness. It just doesn't work. You might get laid down then, but it won't be nearly as good as it is when you get laid and you're also honest. So it's like,
I totally, oh man, I 200% agree with that statement.
So, you know, I've been out with Playboy centerfolds and we had sex and it was like pretty good, but I've been out with women that didn't look nearly as good as those Playboy centerfolds, and the sex was just a whole lot better because we just loved and laughed and played and had a good time with each other and really cared about pleasing each other and had a fine time and weren't all wrapped up in our performance. So it's like basically what happens is if you're taught in this culture to go around saying to yourself all the time, how am I doing? 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 And you're supposed to be hanging out with these other people, and they're all thinking, how am I doing? How am I doing? How am I doing? And finally, you get the question, you say, I don't give a fuck how I'm doing. And then you start doing okay because you're not bugging yourself about how am I doing? How am I doing? How am I doing all the time? It's like how you're doing doesn't make much difference. You know, I teach people to be dumber, not smarter. You know, actually, we invented a chant that always leads to enlightenment within 2 minutes, which I usually charge $2,500 for. I'll give it to you and your guest now for nothing.
Okay, appreciate
this chant for. If you chant this chant for 2.5 minutes, you will become enlightened. And the chant is. Duh. And you just do it for, and if you slobber, you get there in a minute and a half. You just get dumber than a stick, dumber than a damn box of hammers. and just sit there dumb. And then whatever you see in front of you, that person, look at them like a dummy. And where it comes out of your mouth, that would be the dumbest damn thing you ever said. Like, and they'll, all of a sudden you'll be happier, you'll get laid more, you get a raise at work, get more responsibility, not have to work as hard. All these wonderful things happen in your life just because you get dumber than a damn stick and keep acting that way. That's the way to make it in the world. So I teach people to get dumber.
That's an interesting perspective. Wow. Yeah, it's funny you were talking about, you know, people putting on the performance and whatnot. I remember I was telling my listeners that I read this survey they did of men and women in nursing homes, senior citizens basically, and a lot of them were in, at the hospice state where, you know, it was inevitable that they were about to die in a few weeks, a few months. And so they basically asked them things about their life, asked them to reflect, and specifically they asked them, you know, when looking back over your life, what are some of your, say, top five regrets? Things that you did, you wish you didn't, things you didn't do, you wish you did. And a lot of them were different responses from each man and woman, but they said the most consensus response was all, just about all of them said if they had to do life all over again, they, and I'm paraphrasing the words, they would not give a fuck so much what other people thought of them. They would have not tried so hard to live up to other people's opinions and expectations. And
So I guess
you could surmise from that that the biggest mistake a lot of us make going through life is trying too hard to please other people, impress other people, and live up to other people's expectations.
Mm-hmm. And incorporating them and then trying to make ourselves live up to those expectations, so that our performance in front of other people will make them value us. It's too circular. You just need to say, this is what I'm doing. If you don't like it, tell me. If you like it, tell me. Any dummy would do that. And if you're dumb enough to do it that way, then you end up working out better.
See, this is why I love you, Dr. Blanton. I remember when I was in school, they had to take this workshop that was entitled KISS. The acronym KISS, which was, of course, Keep It Simple, mm-hmm. Stupid. And a lot of what was said in that workshop resonated with me. But, yeah, that's how I tried it because, okay, again, going back to, you know, what I do and the guys I work with, I think it is dumb. Well, I'm a reference a movie. I'm a big movie buff, so I tend to reference movies a lot. But there was this movie called A Beautiful Mind. Did you see that movie with Russell Crowe?
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah,
Yeah, see,
and
that movie, I love that movie, and I love Russell Crowe's character in that movie, because, and specifically, as it relates to my book and what I do, and I would say essentially your stuff as well, is when he's interacting with women, I can't remember the exact quote, it's not in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase it, but he would essentially tell women that he thought it was foolish for them to start off pretending that they were supposed to engage in all these platonic, you know, type conversations and interactions when the reality was ultimately he wanted to get in their pants. And they showed scene of him the first time he did it, some woman, I think she threw a drink in his face, and then another one was out. But that's ultimately how he connected with his wife, because when he told her that, she actually agreed. And I just don't get why. I guess you could say, if you were to ask me, Alan, what is your, like, single frustration as far as how people relate to, well, specifically how men and women relate to each other, I don't get that if I meet a woman and I want to fuck her, that I'm supposed to talk to her about her favorite movies and her favorite foods and just some other stuff that I really don't care about. Because I'm the type, if I care about that, I talk about it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, the thing is, you probably, that's at the top of the list because it's the most taboo, but you probably want a bunch of other things from her in addition to wanting to fuck her. And you need to go ahead and say all that, be able to do any of it. And see, you know, basically, I think that people of integrity, men or women, like someone who comes out with whatever is on their mind, even if it's not polite.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that. little game we play in my workshops. It's where somebody turns to somebody on the right and says, sometimes I pretend. And they say, sometimes I pretend like I know what's going on when I don't. And then the other person says, thank you. And they turn to somebody on the right and say, sometimes I pretend like I'm really interested in the conversation when I'm really not. And the other person says, thank you. And go on. As the people go around the circle, more and more people tell more and more things that they pretend, that they're putting out there as what's going on with them when it's not. You know, I pretend like I'm listening to you on the telephone, but I'm not listening. Or I pretend like I'm really excited by an idea, but I don't think it much of it. And we do it all the time. And so basically, we pretend a lot. Well, pretending is a lot of fun. My favorite people in the world are between about 1.5 and about 9.5. They're kids who pretend. We play pretend games like Star Wars and all that stuff all the time. But the problem is, in our culture particularly, when you get to be 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, you start playing a second level of that game, which is called Let's Pretend That We're Not Pretending When We Are. And if I pretend that I'm not pretending when I am, that's called lying. And that's what we do. That's what you're supposed to do as an adolescent. You're supposed to join a game of pretense. You're supposed to pretend like, oh, you think whatever the newest craze is the greatest thing in the world, and everybody pretends like it. Hardly anybody thinks it. And so it's like when you're pretending that you're not pretending when you are, that's when you get in trouble. You can't just handle two levels of that game because even though that's what polite society says you're supposed to do, that's the way you're supposed to act in school, you're supposed to be putting on a good act, and you're supposed to clean up your act and do all that stuff that all the moralists tell you to do. And you need to say, fuck you, this isn't an act. and if you don't like it, you can kiss my ass. And basically, that is what I call the most compassionate attitude there is, because it's being kind to the being over there, but not to their mind. Because if you cooperate with somebody else's mind, you're just entering in the conspiracy for them to bankrupt themselves in the world. And basically, you say, you know, your mind's full of shit, my mind's full of shit, now what? And then you all work out something you want to do together.
Now, in your book, you say a lot of things, but I want to pull out certain things. One, you say, yesterday's truth is today's bullshit. Explain that to my listeners.
Yeah. Well, once you discover something, then you end up sort of memorizing and then making it significant, and you're sort of raising it up for yourself. A new discovery that you make. Today's discovery, you know, you discover I learned how to hit a sand wedge 40 yards to the green when I was playing golf, and I did it 3 or 4 times in practice, and I did it once playing golf. I thought, oh, this is so great. So tomorrow I say, well, I'm 60 yards to the green. I can do that sand wedge thing the same way I did yesterday. And you go out there thinking the same thing you were thinking yesterday, and you think, well, if I just think the same thing, do the same thing, it would work the same way. And sure enough, it does. It goes 40 yards and lands 20 yards short of the green. You know, I see. Oh, yeah, different circumstances. I forgot to pay attention to that. That's the way we all are with our minds. We think that our mind is predicting and controlling based on memory about what's going on. But your mind is a very faulty instrument. It doesn't work very good. And it makes a lot of stupid mistakes. And so you're better off using your eyes and your ears and then you are using your mind, but most people spend most of their time in their minds. So your real life, the quality of your life, the thing that makes life worth living, like those people in that survey said, is basically being here when you're here, not being in your mind when you're here. So being here when you're here means you're here with other people and you're here out loud with other people. That means you've got minds that are interacting and correcting each other. But if you're just performing in front of each other, you don't get enough corrections until it's too late.
Wow, that's deep. That's really deep. Listeners, I'm going to take one more intermission break. But when I get back, I will have even more questions and conversations for Dr. Brad Blanton. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavored Too, presented by Zay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Low One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Low One.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't
know that. It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Fine, so it's just correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so the listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that. Yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my 2012-2013 season finale of Upfront and Straightforward with special guest Dr. Brad Blanton, author of Radical Honesty, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. Welcome back, listeners, to the season finale of the 2012-2013 season of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network in the category of romance and dating and relationships. And again, if you're just tuning in, I've been having the most delightful, enlightening, entertaining conversation with my special guest for the evening. His name is Dr. Brad Blanton. I think the vast majority of my male listeners already know who he is. It's probably a high percentage of my female listeners who do not. His best-known book is entitled Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth. And he is my special guest tonight on my sixth season, the finale of my sixth season on Blog Talk Radio. And we were, of all things, just talking about, before we went to the last intermission break, we were talking about bullshit. And right now I'm pulling out different quotes that I had highlighted the first 2 to 3 times that I read Dr. Bland's book. Another one, you say, what kills us is intense attachment to our interpretations and failure to distinguish interpretations from sensate reality. Can you briefly explain that to me?
Yeah. When we when I work with couples, for example, if, say, the woman says to the man, I'm so mad at you for not doing the dishes when you said you would. She's explaining some kind of causal relationship between her anger and her expectations that were by him speaking something. So I ask her to knock it down to what was done. So I say to him, I resent you for saying you do the dishes. I resent you for the dishes still being in there and that sink dirty. And I resent you for the way you looked when I said, if you're going to do the dishes, do them. Now, that means he knows he was there for what he said and all that stuff. She's, instead of her interpretation of what it meant, she tells him what he did. And you can infer her interpretation, but she's describing what occurred. And the reason for doing that is because when she describes what occurs and she gets mad at him and he feels it back, she has these sensations in her body, like, she feels tension in her stomach, more rapid heartbeat. She's breathing a little harder, and she is like turned toward him, and she's a little louder with some of the words, so that she's able to experience her experience of resentment. Because when she's specific in describing what it is she got mad about, she's describing what occurred, and he gets a similar chance to experience his experience. And the reason for doing that is because when you experience an experience, it comes and then it goes. But when you resist experiencing an experience by categorizing it or trying to understand it or explaining it, it persists because you're blocking experiencing the experience. So when you experience an experience, it comes and goes. So those two could have that argument, get mad at each other and get over it, and both of them do the dishes together and laugh about it. But the people who get an argument about right and wrong, if you say you're going to do the dishes, then do the goddamn dishes right after you say it, or else you shouldn't even say you're going to do the dishes. They can go on with that for like 20 years. And so basically, the moral righteous conversion of that into, well, he's just an asshole who doesn't do what he says he'll do, because that's the way he is, will be the category of her mind that she uses to relate to. Whenever he shows up, she won't relate to him. She'll relate to that category for him. The same thing for him. So one of the things is we have to get over our categories for each other by being able to experience our experience, because it increases, then it decreases, then it goes away. And people try to avoid experiencing their experience by figuring things out instead of feeling their way through things. And it's a big, big, big mistake, because figuring things out doesn't fix anything. Feeling your way through things does. So that's the main thing. The main thing is to get fact that when you experience an experience, you're honestly with it, you tell the truth about it, you look at the other person, you share what goes on, whatever experience comes out of there, it increases, it decreases, it goes away, and then you're open to a new experience. But when you don't let it be in the focus of your attention as you experience, you interrupt it, sort of freeze it in place, categorize it, keep it from completing itself. And when the experience doesn't complete itself, then you're left with this category about what an asshole the other person is, rather than with a new experience of them the next time they walk into the ring. Is that clear enough?
Oh, man, yeah. I'm over here taking notes. yeah, I mean, that's gold. You say in your chapter about being abnormally honest, and I have all kinds of highlights in this chapter, but in one subsection, you say words are labels for pictures, and none of them are real. Can you briefly discuss that?
The thing itself is what's there in the world. The word for it is separate from that. So that when you say the word chair, it's not a chair, it's a word that points to something that exists in the world called a chair. So words are only pointers to something that you can experience. When you're actually looking at a chair, the light is coming off the chair, going to the back of your eyeball, causing a chemical reaction, throwing off an electron, causing a chemical reaction. And there's electrochemical transmission up the optic nerve into the brain, the midbrain, at a place called the visual cortex. And there, a chemical reaction occurs, and you see that chair. And that's happening many, 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 many times a second, much faster than a movie screen. So you have the kind of consistent seeing of the chair. And that experience of that chemical reaction in your brain is basically you creating that chair over there. So I say that who you are is the creator of the world, that you, without worrying about it or thinking about it, you're creating the world constantly. You're creating it by just being here as a human being. What you do as a being will always be much more magnificent than what you do as a thinker or as an explainer of anything. But basically, when someone comes to see me in therapy, they think, I'm thinking of them as gods. They're the creators of the world. And they're thinking of themselves as a shit sandwich. So there's quite a bit of difference between their view of them and my view of them. See, I realize that I'm creating the world once with my being. And then I'm creating a description of the world with my ideas and words about my being. And I don't want to get the two confused, because if you think the world of your mind is something as real as the world that you create with your being, you're just simply wrong. It's a mistake people make all the time. It causes all kinds. Causes people to jump out of the damn window just because they lost their money. It isn't anything but money. And they jump out of the damn window. That's how crazy you get. And that basically we're all crazy as hell. And every now and then we're not crazy when we get grounded in our experience as the creators of our lives. And whenever we're not grounded in our experience, we're just crazy. And
Well, it's funny you use the word crazy. A lot of people, like I'll use myself as an example. A lot of women will say, Alan, some of the stuff you say to women is going to cause you to be perceived as crazy, or some of the stuff you say to women, man, you're just crazy for saying that. What benefit do you think there is to, say, a man being, quote-unquote, polite to a woman, and what detriment is that man going to experience if he puts more emphasis on being polite rather than being accurate and honest and real?
Well, first of all, she's right. You are crazy. Tell her I said so. Tell you had a professional psychotherapist, tell you're fucking crazy, all right? was right about that, all right? And and sometimes it's okay to be polite if you feel polite. If you feel warmly towards somebody or you really appreciate something, you say thank you. It's perfectly all right. It's just when it's not right, you don't feel thank you, but you say it. Or you feel mad, but you act polite. You know, it's like a cop. Sir, would you please give me your driver's license? I said, fuck you, you asshole. You resent me for whatever I was just doing. Basically, people get more polite the more phony they get, generally. You know, this cop out there, he's like not getting paid enough. He's pissed off. He didn't like his job anyway. And he's going to whack you one way or another. And the point is that when the more formally polite people are, when people say yes, sir, and no, sir, when somebody says yes, sir, and no, sir to me two or three times, I just say, forget it, Jack. I'll talk to somebody that's a human being. It's like, I don't know that sir shit. And it's like, when I was a hippie, I used to have really long hair and a long beard. Down to my ass was my hair in the back, and down to my belly button was my beard. And I also had a doctorate, and I was also a reverend. So when people would call me sir two or three times, I'd say it's doctor, it's reverend doctor. So you call me Reverend Dr. Blanton, sir, from now on. And they look at my hairy ass and say, either all right or get the fuck out of here, which would be fine if they get the fuck out of here if we just began our relationship, you know. The thing is, all that formal stuff is just BS. It's like just more BS on top of more BS. So anyway.
I love this quote in here where you say simply, it's not normal to be honest, and you said this throughout this whole conversation today, is that you say normal people are concerned with figuring out the right thing to say that puts them in the best light. They want to live up to their own best guess about what the people they are talking to want to hear.
I
love that.
That survey you were talking about, you know what people said that if they had to do over again, they would do? What they would do is that they wouldn't be playing to that imaginary audience so much. They wouldn't be, like, trying to figure out what it is the other person needs to hear in order for them to have the best, see them in the best light and then doing that. They wouldn't have spent their whole life doing that. They'd spent their life saying whatever they thought or felt or whatever they were doing and then seeing what came out of the other person. And they would have been impolite instead of polite all the time and violated expectations now and then, saying, well, I imagine you expect me to be nicer than I feel because I don't like your ass. I don't like your tone or what's that. And they're expecting you to congratulate them. Then there might be a little set to there. But the thing is, these little set to's, your mind tells you they're going to be tragedies. They're not tragedies. They're just little things that people working stuff through, and then they got along better on the other side of it. And, you know, I like my friends are all people who are like, you know, derelicts and runts and not very polite altogether. You show me somebody that's polite, I'll show you somebody I probably don't like. Republicans, for example. Republicans are all polite. Well, I show me a polite Republican, I'll show you how to cause shit to happen. I play golf with some Republicans, you know, I beat them all the time by just talking to them on the back nine about what a stupid thing the Republican Party is, and it fucks up their golf game, and I win $5 or $6. I said, give me all this Republican money.
Dr. Blount, how would you define or describe the illusion of security?
Well, people think that if you have a certain amount of money in the bank and you have a certain amount of definition of what it is you do, and I don't know, security is the big problem with the government. You know, we're having all this problem with NSA spying on everybody and all that stuff, and that's all in the name of security. And the question is, our paranoia about terrorism makes us build this paranoid security apparatus where nobody has any privacy anymore and everybody's like basically spying on everybody and lying about it. I mean, basically, it maximizes the lives. I saw lots of people as a therapist that were working for the CIA, and they were in the State Department. And then the people that worked with the State Department didn't know they were CIA double agents. And their lives were all screwed up because they're constantly having to manage their lives. And that's what happens to you. You get too concerned about security. There's a great book by Alan Watts called The Wisdom of Insecurity, where he endorses and recommends being insecure. It's better because it keeps you keeping an eye out on what's actually going on rather than trying to stack up the chips to guarantee that everything will be taken care of if some tragedy occurs. So, like, security is not a primary concern. I hate all the security systems on a computer. I don't really give a damn who finds out what I think or say anyway. But the point is, I don't like people lying and hiding and doing all this secret stuff and all these little paranoid adolescent fantasies that end up being the military-industrial complex are just boring and bullshit to me. So I think we need a new society where people tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. We're not anywhere close to it. I'm not an America firster. I don't think America is the greatest country in the world. I think it's maybe 30th or 40th.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay, my final question, since my show primarily deals with dating relationships and attraction and seduction and sex, I just want to ask you one or two questions. Like, one, this comment, you say, there are still, however, all kinds of controls we're supposed to put on our sexual excitement to pretend that it's not there to avoid getting too excited. The problem with denying sexual energy is that sooner or later, somehow or other, it has to be dealt with. Can you briefly elaborate on that?
Well, basically, you know, there are lots and lots of, like, movies and classic cases of people who were suppressing their sexuality and basically went very crazy and became all different kinds of strange perverts and stuff like that, and everybody knows about that. But what I'm talking about is mostly that when you're moderating the truth about what you want and you're lying, it becomes a mesh of lies. It becomes a bunch of little lies, and then you end up not getting what you want, simply because even if you get what you want, you won't even be able to experience it because you're so wrapped up in your mind. And so, generally, people like sex. And if you say, I like sex, nobody's going to be, like, shocked and appalled. They might be shocked and appalled if you say it, like, when you stand at the podium at some national dinner or something like that. But people are always worried about the context, about whether you're polite enough in the context. And the so it looks to me like you have to acknowledge your anger, you have to acknowledge your sexuality, you have to acknowledge your hurt feelings when you get hurt, you got to acknowledge your joy, you got to acknowledge your lust, and you just say it's there. You know, you don't have to act on it. Like, you can say to one, I just love to kiss you and touch you and finger you and fuck you, and if you don't, I'll get over it. And you mean it. So she's not obligated to do what you want her to do. You just tell her your fantasy. And she might think, well, you know, she might say, you're ugly and your mama dresses you funny. Then the odds are you're not going to get him. But that's just information. That's just the information you need to get to that. And so it's like, it's getting out there, and it's an information game, and basically being secretive about what you want to know about or what you have to offer is just a waste of time. So I recommend a simpler, dumber life where you don't be sophisticated at all. You just go out there like a moron most of the time, and you be happier. I tell you, us morons are happier.
Yes, morons are happier. Now, this became a huge debate on my show between men and women. I had some female guests on my show that basically said that they believe that a woman should always keep her sexual past to herself, and that no new boyfriend or potential husband needs to know how many men she slept with and what she did with them. But in your checklist for intimacy, your point number two, you say tell each other your complete sexual history, including how many people you have had sex with, what gender they were, and the details of what you did with them. Please talk to my female listeners about that.
Well, they have what's called the conventional view, and if they want a conventional marriage, then they can have a conventional marriage, but a conventional marriage ain't worth having. So if they want something that works, they better experiment with telling the detailed truth. Because, and also, it's a lot of fun. It gets you, like when a woman tells you in great detail something that she really liked whenever she's getting on with another man, even though you're jealous, you also get horny at the same time. Because a woman being excited is exciting. So,
man, that's so true.
So basically, you're all not sharing a lot of excitement that you have. You can tell her how much fun it was when you had that threesome that time, and tell her every detail of it, and then she'll jump your bones. and you get benefit from it twice. See, anyway, that's to tell the women that talk to you on the show to try it the other way, and then see what happens. Try telling the truth about their previous sexual experience and see what happens.
Yeah, because, man, that's a big issue with, again, with women. I actually, it was so deep that I actually lost some Facebook friends because of this debate. Because these women came on my Facebook page talking about, you know, actually, we ever tell a man, you know, how many men we've been with and... yeah, it just turned into this big back and forth between my male followers and my female friends. And but, yeah, like you said, you know, you could try it the other way. Man, but I have to go back to what you said. That's so interesting what you said about we tend to get simultaneously jealous and horny at the same time. That relates to something I said. I have this book out called Ooh, Say It Again, where I basically say that one of the ways, honestly, I've seduced a lot of women into physical sex is by first having phone sex with them. And one of the things I do a lot of times, one of the things I say in this book is that I say one of the mistakes I think men make is being too quick to try to get that woman to be turned on by you. And I say that you shouldn't do that until after you've at least had sex with that woman once, because she doesn't have any reference point. But I use the example, I say, like, if I'm talking to a woman and she lets me know that she thinks Brad Pitt is just super hot, I'll let her talk about Brad Pitt to the point where her pussy gets wet. And, you know, and some guys are like, man, why would you let a woman talk about another guy? And I'm like, hey, but like you said, there's nothing more of a turn-on than a woman who's turned on. And my attitude is, if Brad Pitt is going to get her pussy wet, I don't have any problem with her talking about Brad Pitt. Well, I know you got to go, and I just more than appreciate, again, you taking time out of your busy schedule
to converse
with me.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you for this whole interview. Yeah, I appreciate you for this whole conversation.
Oh, you're very well. And real quickly, before you go, just tell my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web, and also if you have any particular, like, events or projects coming up that they should know about.
Oh, well, I'm at RadicalHonesty.com, one word, and a lot of my books are there, and there's links there to a whole bunch of things on YouTube and video, and I'm working on a new online course, which will be available sometime late the fall of this year, called The Course in Completion. And I'm doing a workshop in Greece in about a week and a half, but it's already full. And basically, I'll be most of what's happening with my enterprises is on the website.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Matter of fact, I've got a quick convention. One of my listeners to this show is, I'm going to say his name, Vlatko. Vlatko, he likes to be called Val. He actually lives in Greece. And he was writing me about you coming there. He's all excited. I want to say he's one of the ones who purchased one of your spots. I might be wrong. But anyway, I know if he's not attending, he's definitely excited about you coming to Greece. So I wanted to give him a shout out.
Good.
But, yeah, continued success to you, Dr. Bland. I hope one day in the next few months or a couple of years I can cross paths with you and meet you in person.
Great.
I would be overjoyed to do so. Just continue to keep changing people's lives.
All right. Thanks. See you later.
Thank you. ladies and gentlemen, for joining me for the 2012-2013 season. I've had a blast this season, and like I said, I've had great guests. So I just want to say to you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I love and respect all my listeners, and have a safe and thoroughly enjoyable and productive remainder of the summer. And you will hear me live again on either Thursday, September 19th, 2013, or Thursday, September 26th of this year. All right. Take care. And again, thoroughly enjoy the rest of your summer.